Today on the On Enquirer podcast, Jay Layman joins me to preview Illinois football's opening kickoff against UAB, 8 p.m. Central Time on the Big Ten Network on Thursday this week. We all get it started. We get to see Kuytenhauser, a new-look offensive line, and a new-look defense under Bobby Hauck. Jay breaks down what he wants to see from that defense, what he wants to see from the offense, some players he's really interested to see, and what it's like for a player getting ready for week one. That's all coming up next, right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast. Welcome into the Illini Enquirer podcast. It is the first Monday of the season. It is game week, and Jay Layman is here with us, Illini Enquirer football analyst and All-American linebacker. Jay, it's game week, man. How you feeling?
I feel great. I feel better for the players because, man, it's such a grind to get here. From the bowl game to now, there's a lot of stuff in between. The portal now, the spring ball session, of course, camp, summer conditioning, and they're all ready to play, I'm sure of it. And, you know, it's a short game week, so they're ready to roll.
I was going to say, I think most of your years was preparing for Missouri, right? So, or some of your years. What's the difference in preparing for, you know, every opponent's an opponent on the schedule? This is an FBS opponent from the American Athletic Conference in UAB, but it's not quite Missouri. So what's the difference in preparing for that, or is there?
Well, I think you never quite know what you have as a football team, you know, year to year. I mean, you think you do, but players are different in games. I heard Bobby Hauck say that as well just the other day in his press conference, that, hey, they've looked good in practice and that's what they've done, so I have confidence that he'll do that. But you never know what's going to happen in a game. I do think that when you play a Power 5 opponent, or maybe even a conference opponent like Virginia and NC State played in a week zero game last week, there is a higher level of intensity and urgency and all hands on deck as far as, like, hey, starters are going to play the whole time. I think when you are playing against a UAB, against a Western Illinois, on paper, and the game's definitely not one on paper, but it looks like you have more talent and should win this football game. And so, especially if you're a backup, you're like, this might be one of the few games that I actually get in. So if you're a backup, you're launched in. If you're a starter, you simply want to look crisp. You want to take care of business and really limit the mental errors. But I think it feels like no matter what you say, there's always more urgency if it's a Power 4 opponent, just because it's like, this is going to be a big game. And when we played Missouri, it was like, and Zook had a tendency to make every game, you know, big.
Yeah.
But and even though it didn't define the season, we bounced back, you felt like you had to really play well.
Well, Jay, I'm going to ask you this question because you're out and about in Champaign-Urbana. I get to hear from fans. I get to see the metrics of all these things leading up to a season. Last year, the hype was unreal, right? I mean, the expectation almost was this team will be in the mix for a college football playoff. And even though they didn't get there, they win 9-plus games, which was a great season for Illinois football. How do you think the excitement level compares right now compared to going into last year?
So I don't think it's nearly as – I don't think it's excited about how good Illinois will be, because Illinois, you know, was trending toward those top 12 spots and even stuck into the top 10 for a week there. But I think there is a lot of excitement about what does this team actually look like? Yeah. What does Kuytenhauser look like? What does this defense look like? I think there was a lot of excitement about some of the new receivers. Some of them have been obviously banged up. So it's more like an unknown of what do we actually have, as opposed to we believe we're going to be in the college football playoff. I don't believe that the expectations are as high as last year. I think most fans know there was a lot of turnover, and although we've had pretty good consistent success under Brett Bielema, we aren't that far removed from, you know, winning 23 or 24 Big Ten games from 2009 to 2010 or whatever, or 2020, whenever Brett got here, right? So it's like, we understand that a 6-7 win team and going to a bowl may not be that big of a disappointment. They've got bigger goals than that, but considering all the turnover they've had at the end of the day, and you never know how a season's going to shake out with injuries and who gets hot and who doesn't, I don't think the expectations are quite as high, but I do think they're excited to see what's going to be on the field.
Jay, I got a column coming out about Bobby Hauk unveiling his defense, because that was the biggest move of the offseason. I mean, Kayton Hauser is the most important player for this season, but long-term in Brett Bielema's tenure, hiring Bobby Hauk was the biggest deal. So this will be our first public taste of this defense. Now, I don't expect everything to be unveiled against UAB, or you hope not, but what do you expect defensively to see from Bobby Hauk against UAB?
Well, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a lot more movement and pressure than we've seen before. When I say movement before the snap, maybe trying to cause confusion to the offensive line of where these guys are actually going to be lined up play to play. And then also they could be lined up in a position and before the snap do some what we call stem to a different position, a different looking front, to have a linebacker rush that maybe you weren't ready for. You know, the 3-3 has a little bit of symmetry, meaning it looks the same to each side, where an over defense often doesn't look the same, or an under defense often doesn't look the same, and you give away where you're putting your strong side backer. So you have this symmetry in which it's hard for the offense and the quarterback to know where is the pressure coming from, where are they coming from now. Is it going to be no pressure? Is it going to be pressure? And then sometimes they're going to show pressure and not bring anything. That being said, I think they're gonna, and I listened to Coach Hauk's, you know, press conference. They're gonna do what they've done well in practice, and what they've, I would say their basic 4 to 6 defensive plays. You know, I have 2 or 3 base defenses and probably 2 or 3 blitzes that they'll show against UAB, and just enough to make Duke work on a few different things to kind of prepare for that. But I don't think we'll see the full slate of what this defense can do until we play that Duke game. And then I think we'll see a number of exotic things. That might be the most exotic week in college football, because Manny Diaz likes to run a lot of blitzes on the defensive side, and Bobby Hauk likes to bring a lot of movement and different looks that maybe we haven't been accustomed to. So I don't think we'll get the full platter, but I do think we'll get the appetizer this week.
Yeah, I'm excited to see an aggressive defense again and see how it's unveiled, Jay. But what's a success for you on the defensive side of the football against UAB?
I always talk about playing clean. And, you know, it always, to me, it goes back to any defensive player, and this is just how I was trained, is it's all about alignment. Alignment is with where you're lined up in that scheme, and how is your stance. You're in the proper stance. I know this seems basic, but alignment and stance. Then your assignment. Are you doing what you're supposed to do? Okay. And then I always, your eyes, meaning are you reading the proper keys and identifying, is it a run or a pass? Can be one of two things. And then how do you respond and play with the proper technique after you identify that it's a run or a pass? And of course, giving all effort to the football and tackling the ball when you get there. And so when I think about those 4 or 5 progressions, every defensive player has to go through those every defensive play. And to get in the mind of a defensive player, he's always got to line up. He's got to know what his assignment is. Then he's got to identify with his eyes, okay, read his key to identify run or pass, and then go play with tremendous effort and make a play on the football. That's what I want to see. But I want to see that from 11 guys. And so basically that creates clean football. Are you going to have some mental errors week one? Sure. But you want to have errors that are more based on, oh, I was going full speed and I missed a tackle, rather than I lined up wrong or I had a stupid penalty post or pre-snap. And so I think that's what I'm looking for. I'm also looking for who are the guys that flash that can make plays, because the reality is this defense was short on playmakers last year. And Gabe Backus obviously had his moments. With Xavier Scott out, it was difficult. And Matthew Bailey made his fair share of plays. But this defense is predicated more on making a negative play and causing confusion during a drive to stymie a long drive, rather than a bend but don't break. We don't think you can make it 15 plays down the field and score. And if you're playing a defense like that, you've got to cause enough confusion to make a negative play, to cause a turnover, to cause a penalty, to get an interception, whatever it may be. Who are going to be those playmakers for us on defense that can create a negative play? Not just guys that will do their job, but a guy that will create a negative play, that create momentum for the defense and start to flip the field for the defense so the offense can have a better position.
And we focus so many times about the defensive line, and we fretted all season about the defensive line, Jay. And of course, Joe Barna, Pat Farrell, Daryl Prater all have to step up. But I look at this defense and look at your position. Like, the linebackers have to be playmakers in this defense. And James Kreutz, we've seen him play a lot of ball. He steps into a way bigger role as a starter and potentially the green dot of this defense. Ish Conte hasn't played a lot of ball, even though he's a fifth-year guy. And then Mason Moragan, now with Daniel Brown out, he steps into a big role. That guy's played five defensive snaps. The staff is raving about him, but that Mike position is one of the best pass rushers, or needs to be one of the best pass rushers on this team. Very versatile chess piece. So what are you looking for out of those guys who are older but haven't played a lot of ball?
Oh, well, Mason Moragan. How old is Mason Moragan?
He's a senior.
Listen, I had not heard of Mason Moragan. Has he been here 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay, here's it. This is bad.
Tore his ACL his sophomore year. And then last year, the staff likes him, but he was kind of, you know, this kind of linebacker slash edge that struggled to find a role. And, you know, now he's a starter on this team.
Yeah, so I have heard more about Mason Moragan just in camp impressors than I have heard in his entire career. And part of that is the scheme, because I think we're more linebacker focused than we were before. And I think we were more edge defensive line and defensive back focused last year. But I think the linebackers are playing a bigger role. There's no question there. Moragan's the most he's the most intriguing guy to me, because we haven't seen a lot of him playing, but it sounds like he's made some huge leaps. And that can happen when you finally get healthy, right? Like, when you're finally healthy, you've been in the system, you've had 4 or 5 years to develop. He's a guy that's body-wise is going to be ready for the NCAA football, because he's been in a strength program. So I think I'm most intrigued by Moragan. Ish Conte is a guy they liked, I know, coming out of JUCO, and has really worked for everything. It sounds like he's grown as a leader, and Brett's calling him out in press conferences, in team meetings and whatnot. And I think that intrigues me. And Kreutz has always been a wild card, because you've seen the ranginess, you've seen the talent, right? I would say the first year or two, you'd say he was a little light in the loafers, but played early, had some trouble at the point of attack. Now he's been in there, and he's played with some injuries too, hand injuries here and there, and been banged up. But he's a guy that I think is probably one of the more versatile guys they have. He's shown that he can blitz. He's shown that he can play in coverage. So they have experience with Kreutz, but they also have guys that are older in Conte and Moragan. Now, this is what good programs do, is they develop and hold on to guys for 3 or 4 years. Conte was a little bit different in that he was a JUCO. But these are guys that, you know, really didn't have much playing time, but then step in and you're hoping there's not a huge drop-off. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, because they had a lack of playing time in the old system, Ish Conte and also Mason Moragan, they may be more adept to pick up this new system, because they didn't have any of the old system that was maybe in their hard drive telling them to do techniques and plays differently. So I'm interested to see, because it sounds like that they are relying on those three to make plays more than they have in the prior defenses. And I just look back, and I think Dylan Rosiak was a solid player, banged up a lot. But I'm trying to think about, since, you know, Jake Hansen left, have we really had a playmaker at that off-the-ball linebacker position? And I would just say probably not. You know, you've had guys that have stepped in and played a bit. Malachi Hood at one point for a game or two, and then he left, right?
Remember C.J. Hart for a game against Nebraska in the opener? That was about it, and then he got hurt, yeah.
Then he got hurt. Yeah, I think they had that fumble recovery for a touchdown, right? You really haven't had a playmaker at linebacker. And we saw what a playmaker at linebacker can do. I mean, we saw Wisconsin had two good young linebackers. I think one of them got picked up by Ohio State last year as freshmen, came in. And what they can do defensively, it's something that's been missing in the Brett Bielema era. And it's one of the reasons we've struggled to consistently stop the run and get negative plays. I think this allows us to play linebackers not only more frequently, but also put them in the position to make negative plays for this defense.
I want to follow up before we move to the offense, Jay, just because this is obviously your expertise at this position, obviously not this defense, but James Kreutz, when Hawk got hired, I thought this is a guy that could be helped by this D. It just felt like Kreutz's style fit this style of defense. Sure. Do you think that at all? Am I off, or is that on the right track?
Well, I think Kreutz has always been a rangy kid. He's never been a guy that is going to be a huge thudder, but he's also, you know, not going to be a blazer. He was kind of a tweener, but he's always made plays at whatever level he's at. He made plays at Loyola enough to get, you know, a scholarship. And then when he's been in, there's been games when he's been really productive and other games where you feel like he hasn't been there, but you felt like he needed a change in scheme. And I would agree. I think that Kreutz could have a breakout year. He's certainly got the experience. He's healthy. We know he's got the pedigree. And I think in what I've seen with Bobby Houck's defense and whatnot, if you can be a smart football player and be cerebral as a linebacker, you can play in this system. And I think James Kreutz fits that. And you're going to have to rely on him because he's got the most game experience of any linebacker you have. So you hope that he takes a jump for sure.
All right, let's move to the offense, Jay. The one really negative storyline on this side of the ball, when there's been a lot of positives otherwise, is that they've had a lot of injuries to wide receiver. Jay Sean sure. Platt, going to miss this game. Sounds like he can miss multiple games. I don't like the sound of it right now. And then Alex Perry out for potentially the year. Losing two of your top five wide receivers, how does that impact the offense, and how do you think Barry Loney kind of adjusts there?
It's a great question. It sounded like those guys were intricate parts of the game plan. And now that they're out, you obviously have to put the backup in. And how does that make it play? I still think you got your bookends on the outside with Hudson Clement and you got Colin Dixon. You'd be hard-pressed to find two steadier guys on the outside. Not flashy, very, very steady. So I think that's a great thing. Do I think we run probably a little bit more 11 personnel with Caden Fagan in? And maybe Christian Abney in, 12 personnel yeah. with Caden Fagan and Christian Abney, meaning they have two tight ends in. Yes. Do I think Braden Trimble has an accelerated path to playing time? I do. But the way they've talked about Braden Trimble from a character perspective, from an ability perspective, he may be a guy that plays and you may stay, man, he might have to stay out there if he plays the way that the coaches talk about. So I think. From a receiver standpoint, that's what if I'm Caden Hauser, I'm going to go to where I'm comfortable. Where am I comfortable throwing the football? Who do I trust throwing the football? It's got to be Colin Dixon and Hudson Clement, obviously. And then who steps in? Trimble? Is it Caden Fagan? We haven't seen Caden Fagan much in practice. Anybody in practice, so we don't know what kind of role the tight ends will play in the pass game. And then, I know there's a whole bunch of other guys. We've heard of Sitchi. We've heard of Eberhardt, we've heard of
Jershon Newton.
Jershon Newton, Johnny Newton's brother, right? We've heard of all these different people. Who is going to step in and make a play? But that being said, I still think Hudson Clement and Colin Dixon, it's not a very hot take at all, I get, but we'll have the lion's shares of the throws to them.
And Jay, I would ask you, Colin Dixon, Hudson Clement, I think you kind of explained them pretty well. I don't know if there's an elite trait physically with either of those guys. Good size, not elite size. Good quickness and speed, not elite. What makes them good? Because I have no question those two are going to be productive. So why are they good when it comes to Big Ten competition?
It's a great question. I think Colin Dixon, since he's been here, has been good at all and very solid at all the skills it takes to be a receiver. Is he going to burn you and stretch the field like crazy? No. He has enough to keep Giannis. We saw that in the Indiana game last year, actually. Scored a touchdown. He's stronger than most, okay? He's more strong than I would say a blazer. He's also a good blocker, a good leader, obviously a captain on the team. And so he's kind of one of those guys where if you were to measure him at the combine, he'd say, he's okay. But I think when you put pads on him and play football, he's a darn good football player. And I really like Cullen because and you feel like also – the durability aspect has been there as well. I mean, you have to give credit to a guy who I don't think has missed a game. I'm trying to remember if he's missed a game.
No,
I don't think so.
He's played over 1,000 snaps the last 2 years.
And that's not all the people's fault that do get hurt. But I will say there is something you said about, are you durable? Can you actually hold up? Hudson Clement, on the other hand, is a little bit different in that I see him as a really good route runner, honestly, with really solid hands. He's crafty in what he does, has a little bit of a Zachary Franklin kind of feel to him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, hasn't picked up systems as quickly as Colin Dixon, and also has struggled with injuries. But when he plays with confidence, he is a legit number two receiver for this team. And at times, I would say when it comes to third down, might be the number one third down guy now that Jayshon Platt is a little bit banged up. Because I would say that although both of them are mid-range receivers between 5 and 15 yards, Dixon and Clement, it seems to me like Clement gets targeted on third down specifically in that 7 to 8 yard range catch. So he's a third down specialist. So none of them will kill you with their measurables. But if you look at what they've done with Clement at West Virginia and Illinois and also Colin Dixon, they produce. And if you produce and can stay healthy, you can play football.
Well, Jay, on that side of the ball, obviously everyone's excited for Caden Hauser to see what he looks like in his first game after all of this praise that has just been heaped upon him. I mean, the staff has really built him up. Like, this is going to be one of the strengths of the team.
Sure.
So for you, what's a success look like for Caden Hauser in this offense against UAB?
Well, you know, I was trolling X, I don't know, last week or something, and that's kind of a dangerous thing to do, but I was trolling X, and you know, somebody tweeted that he could possibly be like, oh my gosh, this guy's tape out of Eastern Carolina is great. He could be a top 50 pick. Somebody said that. And I was like, okay, that might be a little pie in the sky considering the quarterback class that is coming out this year, which is pretty stacked. But I can't remember a coaching staff at Illinois being this high on a quarterback prior to him playing. And maybe it's because he's a senior. And it's like, okay, this is last year, so we got to build his confidence up. I don't get that. Barry Lunny doesn't blow a lot of smoke. He seems really confident.
That's my thing, Jay, is it's not like these guys don't know a good quarterback play. Like, this is Barry Lunny, Mike New, right, who's a former head coach at this level. And
yeah,
Coach
Drew Brees.
Right?
Like, at the Saints.
Like, if it was just Art Sikowski doing this, I'd be like, okay, Art, let's calm down a little bit. But this, like, Barry and Mike and Brett doing it is a little bit more like out there.
They really like it. You know, I saw Brett, this is probably 2 or 3 months ago, and Brett likes to troll on X. I mean, he might be one of the biggest Big Ten trolls out there on X, but he, you know, there was like a list of top 5 Big Ten quarterbacks or something, and he kind of responded with a little don't tell anybody about Caden Hauser. I think they really like him. He's a lot bigger than Luke. It'd be hard to be craftier than Luke because Luke is a pretty crafty little guy.
Yeah.
But I think he's powerful. I think they like his release a little bit better. They get the ball out. I think he's can make all the throws. And like they said, what he put on film in Eastern Carolina was great, but they hadn't really asked him to do at Eastern Carolina what they wanted him to do at Illinois. And so can Barry Lunny and Mike New transition and get him to do what they want? I would say yes. And I got a lot of respect for Luke Altmyer, what he did, but I'm not expecting a huge drop-off. And I don't think the coaches are either. And I think that, to me, is really, really interesting. To be said, though, I've never seen the guy throw a live football. Like, I've watched some tape of him and whatnot.
I can tell you.
So it's very difficult for me. But based on what the coaches say, like, yeah, it sounds good.
I got to see one practice, and the hype was worth it based on that one practice I got to see. Nice. This guy can throw it. He can throw it in the buckets. His timing is what really stands out with me, Jay. Like, he's throwing it before a receiver makes his break. And I think that's just stuff that a guy who's played a lot of football has learned, right? Like, when you get younger guys out there, they don't trust it as much. This guy trusts it. But the one thing I want to ask you, Jay, and I know you're not a quarterback, they talked a lot about footwork with him. Like, that footwork, like lining it up with everything. Why is that important? Even from a defender's perspective, but quarterback, like, that's the one thing they've really talked about, especially Mike New, is the intricacies of footwork they really worked on with him.
Well, I mean, all of your power as a thrower comes from, getting power, pushing off of the ground through your legs, right? I mean, if you were to you know, hang a Caden Hauser up like a puppet and say, throw as far as you can and you're off the ground, he wouldn't be able to throw that far, right? Because everything is transitioning and taking the power through your legs, pushing off of the ground and kind of generating power. So I think your footwork, number one, generates power. Number two, a lot of times your footwork is also key to your accuracy. Yes, you have to follow through and whatnot, your accuracy as well. And there's also a lot of footwork. I mean, there's a reason that quarterbacks work handoffs and work zone reads, you know, 50 to 100 times a practice. I know you take it for granted on how the handoff gets there or how the ball gets to different things. That's actually something that you got to work on as well for each different scheme, for each different back, for each different timing. And so I think, first off, it comes down to just the strength of the throw, the accuracy of the throw, and then in general, ball handling and running the offense. So that's the footwork that I would probably say he's speaking to. And what's good about Caden Hauser is he seems like he's got a thick lower body. And he's a big guy. And so I don't think strength's going to be an issue, but, you know, and also footwork within the pocket. If you ever watched Drew Brees play, you know, it wasn't a blazer, but unbelievable footwork and balance within the pocket to feel pressure and whatnot and keeping, you know, his balance so that he could be accurate down the field.
So, Jay, we've gone this whole way talking about a Brett Bielema offense and not brought up the run game. The offensive line debuts, a new look offensive line. Feel like Illinois's got a good group of running backs behind them. So even if it includes pass pro, like, what do you want to see out of the offensive line in their debut together here?
Well, I think you want to see an ability to really set what I would say, set the tone of the game. I mean, they're, at minimum, they're getting 3, 4, 5 yards of carry. I think last year there was just way too many negative plays in the run game. And especially when they brought run stuffing pressure. We saw that a little bit, one or two times against Western, but we really saw it against Duke. And so how do we prevent negative plays on this defense and so on this offensive line? And because we saw a lot of it. So I'm looking for lack of negative plays, imposing your will. If it's third and short, where are you running about? Is it Michael Madelak? Madelau. Is it him? Is it someone else? Is it Brandon Henderson? Do you feel like Renfro, Henderson, and Madelau kind of create a tip of the spear in which the QB sneak and a tush push becomes part of what we do with Caden Hauser's body? So all of those are things I'm kind of looking at. Can they protect Hauser on a long form play action where it's a hard play action to Aiden Loughery or Khalil Valentine? He kind of turns his back to the offensive line and sets up his feet and takes a shot. I don't know how many of those we'll have. Lunny usually has 2 to 4 a game in there. I do believe the majority of it will be timing and getting out the ball quick to kind of give them a break, which is kind of an offensive line break. But can they do that when it's really long form play action? That's a question I have as well.
Jay, I wrap up with you here. Is there a player you're higher on than most people going into this year? Or I get just a player you want to highlight.
It's hard because again, you don't see any of this, and you don't see people. People are high on this guy, so I don't know. I'm high on Aiden Loughery. I know people are probably, that's probably not a great huge take, but I just think we haven't seen this guy play a full season healthy. And I think if he plays a full season healthy, we're going to see some special things. So I'm high on him. Mason Moragan, the guy that keeps on people talk about, I have no idea who this guy is, but I'm looking forward to watching him play. And I've also heard, you know, I've heard good things about Nick Hankins and what he's done in the defensive backfield. Can he break into the rotation? But I think it always starts up front, and so I'm gonna go Joe Barna. I know he's one of the few guys that has played and has time. I think you can kind of get lost when we're trying to talk about all these different pieces. We kind of forget that Joe Barna has been productive, had a sack fumble in the bowl game, and that really helped momentum in that game. And so I'd probably say Joe Barna. None of those are great takes. Yeah. I get it. Special teams, I don't know anybody, and so I'm terrified because your punter, your snapper, your returner, your kicker are all new. I think that is just we've won so many hidden yard and battles with special teams and penalties. We haven't really had to think about that, and I think those that hidden yardage could be flipped this year possibly in some games. And I'm concerned about that with a newer offensive line and newer special teams. And when you're playing a lot of one score games, which was Brett's good, sometimes that can be the difference. And so those are things that keep me up at night.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, as good as Kaiten Howser can be, I mean, you just had the clutchest quarterback potentially in the country besides maybe Fernando Mendoza last year. So, like, can he make those plays, or can he make the plays with his legs? So, like, those one score games, you feel like Illinois 8-1 the last 2 years, does that start to flip a little bit? Even if Illinois does some good things, like, those little plays, Jay, can make the difference in that record at the end of the year.
Well, and Luke would elevate his game in the fourth quarter. I mean, and become a different player. Sometimes he would start slow, but certainly elevated his game in the fourth quarter and had a tremendous amount of poise. And I think had so many opportunities to do that, that he got very, very comfortable with it. And can Kaiten Howser do that? We sure hope so. I'm not sure. He certainly hasn't had the Power Four experience that Luke has had to do that. And so we'll see, though. And all these things kind of between a clutch quarterback and the hidden yardage and a good kicker, all those things kind of help the team that's, you know, close in the fourth quarter. Can we have those things happen again? We'll see.
One thing I want to get to before we get out of here, Jay, Xavier Scott is back. And I don't feel like we talked about that enough. Like, he was one of the best DBs in the country 2 years ago. What's the impact of that for the defense and Bobby Hout?
Well, I think what Xavier does is he has an ability to play multiple positions. He can play free safety. He can play nickel. He can play corner. I think that alone makes him highly, highly versatile and highly valuable. Again, we've said it a lot. The nickel position is a position that is targeted on third down when they're guarding the slot, or they'll move their best receiver into where the nickel, or the nickel tracks one of their best receivers. And you have to be really elite at changing direction in small spaces, but also have the ability to run vertical down the field, because they can run by you right there in the nickel position, usually at that number two receiver slot. When I say number two, second from the sideline in. And so I think that's the big question I have with him. Now, I'm also wondering, you know, he's shown to be an adequate blitzer too in the past. How does he blitz in this 3-3-5? I mean, let's remember, Xavier Scott's the reason that 2 years ago Illinois beat Kansas at home, because of the pick six, because of some of the sacks that he had. He is a guy that can make big plays. And we talk about, this is a defense that is going to live on making a negative play and a big play once or twice a drive to help stymie the momentum of the offense. I think he's one of those big play guys. To give an old Coach Zook quote, your A-plus players have to play A-plus games to actually win. And so if you think you're, you know, an All-American player, you got to make All-American type plays. And does he have the ability to do that? Yes. Is he healthy? From what we know, yes. So I'm excited to see Xavier Scott. And you're right. I think he's been kind of a foregone conclusion that he's going to be good. But coming back after an injury, it's always can be a little bit different. I do think he's probably one of, if not the best defensive player we have.
Jay Lehman, you're the goods, man. We've talked enough about what could happen. I'm excited to talk about what did happen. So I'm looking forward to next week where we can talk a little Illinois UAB and look forward to the game against Duke.
Oh, that's going to be great. I can't wait to actually see these guys play. Yeah. You know, I think one thing that's difficult about this new era, and I get it, that they just are very secretive, but we don't get to see these guys play.
No spring game, no open practice, yeah.
No open practices. I mean, it wasn't too long ago. I remember going to Lovey Smith practices and watching the whole practice. And it wasn't too long ago that was okay to do. We see more NFL training camps than we do of college football teams. And the secrecy and quirkiness in my mind, and it's every program, it's not just Illinois, has just, you know, that's an area of the rule book that probably needs to be systematized as well.
Oh, you're speaking my language, Jay. Let's
everybody throw out their. I mean, we have people betting on stuff anyway, right? So, I mean, let's throw out whatever our rosters are, two deeps are. Let's have an open session of practice, you know, once a week, media availability. Let's systematize the college game, just like college was the last one to put stuff on like tablets and stuff. Like, people are like, that's a big deal. That's been going on since like 2010. 10 in the NFL.
Right.
And they had pictures in the NFL. Meanwhile, high schools across America were using TVs and tablets in like 2015. And so college football, for some reason, has this resistance to change, or they just make no rules at all and everybody can do whatever they want when it comes to transfer. So it's very hard. I don't envy your job, because I think what you do is very difficult for a roster of 100 people. You know, there's a two deep of 44 to 50 people. And you honestly haven't been able to watch them play. You're trying to get snippets out of press conferences and what was his high school film like, and what was his production here. And it's, I feel bad. The product that I feel like I can talk about is so much speculation to you guys this morning. It's hard.
Well, and for me, it's like, I just think it creates more excitement about your product. I think it just brings fans in. And kudos to Brett for making his assistants so available, for making so many players available. I appreciate all that. But just, you know, I think a spring game served a purpose, not as much for the team, but for the fans. Right, it's just you get to see these guys, you get to get excited about them, and I get you don't want to give up a lot, but there's ways around that. Like, we don't need to report what a scheme looks like every day, but like just seeing these guys move and perform, and sharing that with the fans, or letting the fans see it a little bit, I think is advantageous. But the head man thinks differently.
I at least believe that guys like you and Lauren Tate and Scott Bate, who's ever on the beat for multiple years, should graduate to some kind of, okay, we'd actually trust these guys not to take a video of such and such or say such and such. But I get it. They don't necessarily have to do that. And the same has been true for – and Illinois is not even the worst of them all.
No.
I would say Michigan under Jim Harbaugh was literally you'd get a numerical roster on Friday before you tried to announce a football game. And people are wondering why you don't even know who the starters are.
Illinois' approach is par for the course nowadays. I don't like it, but they are like media. It's not like they're worse than others. Like, they're worse than others. There are others that have open practice. So I understand it. And most fans would probably say, hey, if you win games, I don't care. But I just think it creates a little bit more excitement, a little bit more connection if you have a little bit more open to everybody.
Well, and I think if you win games – yeah, I mean, I think Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan kind of have that. We have this built-in huge fan base, where Illinois has a fan base that ebbs and flows based on wins, right? And excitement. We're obviously, you know, feel like the juice is on for Illinois football right now, so we're excited. I think the more information we can get, the better. So I give you guys a lot of credit, what you guys are doing at 247 and making it happen with limited access to looking at players. So appreciate you guys.
It's amazing how much I did learn in one open practice, though, and is able to share with the fans, which is great. I can say, hey, Kate Hauser looks pretty good.
Locked in. Phone on airplane mode. You were just, you know.
All right, Jay Layman, you're the goods. We'll talk next week, man.
All right, see you. Bye-bye.
All right, great stuff there from Jay Layman, as always. I did not put him up to that at the end. That was just natural. We came up with that, and Jay wanted to talk about it. But, yeah, I mean, that's what – is exciting about this game, is we finally get to see a little bit more. We got to see one practice, got to see glimpses of practice, but not a lot. Now we get to see what these guys look like. And I'm not as concerned about the offense, but the defense, that'll be where we get to see a little bit. We're going to see a lot more against Duke, of course, you'd think, but that's why it's exciting for, I think, a lot of fans, just to kind of see what this all looks like. And, you know, as much as we talk about Kate and Hauser and some of the stars of this team, for me, it's the offensive line. It's that linebacker crew, guys we don't really know much about. Like, even the defensive line, these guys have played, a lot of college football. The linebackers have not, outside of James Crute. So really excited to see what those guys look like in action. But we appreciate you listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit that like button down below, subscribe to us, and hit that notifications bell. Later this week, we're going to bring on the coach, Matt Pistol, to talk about the defense, what we're going to see out of Bobby Houck defense. He's been studying up on this defense over the offseason, so we'll have him on here to break that down. And Joy Wagner and I will do our bowl predictions podcast. We'll preview the UAB game as well. And then Thursday night, probably after midnight, so Friday morning actually, we'll do our live post game, our first of the 2026 season. So make sure you hit that notifications bell so you are alerted when we go live and we do our post-game podcast. Looking forward to that as well. And don't forget, we got VIP membership deals going on, $1 for your first month. So if you just want to try us out for the first month of the season, try that out. And after that month, you get complimentary access to Paramount Plus and their great library, which I keep saying, my kids have been all over Paramount Plus here recently. So you parents, it's a nice kind of addition to the Illini Inquirer VIP access. But we also have 60% off our annual VIP deal, more than $80 of savings for your first year of Illini Inquirer. But for Jay Layman, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.